Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Everyone, welcome to Seek Reality. I'm so glad you're with us. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm especially delighted with our guest today. You're going to have fun with this. One of the things that we afterlife researchers are being told by our own spirit guides that it's time for us to begin to mentor our all-important next generation in this work. Because many of us are in our 70s. I know I sound like a, child, but I am really not at this point. And while things are moving quickly in our field, we know that a lot of us are going to be watching the truth dawn on the world from the bleacher seats. We don't mind that. That's going to be a lot of fun. But we need to have a sterling young group of extraordinary experts available then to enlighten seekers and to dispel confusion as the world comes into the light. How do we think the truth is going to dawn with such force that it will be impossible for scientists and religionists to deny it? Well, those that we used to think were dead are working now on developing electronic communication between here and there that will be so easy to use and so reliable that people will be, chatting with the dead person during his funeral and talking to their children who maybe went ahead of them and ringing up Aunt Mildred from their cell phone app and getting her recipes. It'll be a natural part of life to be involved with people that we used to think were dead. And they're not actually dead. People say that day is coming soon. So people like my guest today are very important to us, to those of us working in this field, because they're the ones who are going to be helping the world when this wonderful day comes. Among those that we older researchers are most confident of is this young man. His name is Cyrus Kirkpatrick. He's barely 30, but he has already written a great book called Understanding Life After Death. And yet now he's doing cutting-edge personal research in some of the most promising fields of afterlife investigation. Today he's going to talk with us mainly about out-of-body travel, which I think is something a lot of people don't understand but are interested in. Welcome, Cyrus. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, Roberta. How are you doing?
I'm thrilled, just delighted, and having a wonderful day. So this is going to be a nice bit of icing on my cake. Please tell people who you are, because you have been my guest before, but many people I probably didn't hear your details. You're so young. How did you ever get started in doing this?
Well, I mean, I think I had an interest from an early age. I may attribute that to an extent to growing up on a ranch. And I had more free time than some kids had, so I had more time to think about complex subjects. And I think, growing up in that environment can have an effect like that. But also, I mean, on a more metaphysical level, I suppose you could say it's possibly in my DNA. Maybe it's my purpose to talk about these subjects and explore it and try to uncover some of these mysteries. I don't know. But I've definitely had an interest for a long time.
We do know that people plan these things, and knowing you and knowing your history, I have no doubt this was part of your plan. You came in with this in mind, and you certainly are doing wonderfully with it.
Well, I'm doing the best I can. I mean, I certainly have other interests as well, but this has always been the back of my mind. I mean, starting off when I was a lot younger, when I was 13, 14, I was definitely more of a skeptic. And it evolved over a long period of time. And a lot of it involved looking at the evidence and researching and taking things from a scientific angle. And I didn't have like a spiritually transformative experience or anything that like set me on the path. It was more like realizing that this is something that is highly relevant to everybody and then noticing how nobody else was thinking about it.
Okay, so you had no transformative experience. I had the crutch of that. I knew something. I knew that there was a lot more than we could see, but you didn't. So you were incredibly brave as a skeptic to research all of this, because what if you had found out there was no such thing as life after death? That would have been pretty depressing when you're so young. You were very brave, Cyrus.
I think it was the kind of the fear of thinking, well, maybe there isn't life after death, and this is something that I have to uncover. So I don't spend the rest of my life wondering if it's there or if it's not there. I remember because my brother, he's very existential, a very smart guy, but he tends to side more with ideas about like existentialism. And I remember him talking about concepts like quantum immortality, which is that, well, you know, if we, you know, if we, you know, if you die, you have no recognition of consciousness of the time you didn't exist. So you must mathematically exist again in some way. And I thought this was interesting, but it's a very, it's a very limited perspective, isn't it? Because it still means that, you know, you will die. There's no rhyme or reason or purpose. It's all just going to happen spontaneously. Nobody knows what really happens. So on one hand, I thought it was interesting, but I was also disturbed by those ideas. And so I wanted to explore further. And I began researching like near-death experiences. And that probably helped set me on my path. But as I said, it just continued for years. Like you said, I'm 30 now. I mean, really, I think it came to a head maybe in 2014 when I began having my own experiences. I began going out of my body, having these astral experiences, communicating with people who have passed on, and finally going from concept into reality, where I get to go from all this theoretical stuff to having my literal experiences to verify those ideas. So that was the big deal.
Cyrus, how did you get started doing out-of-body travel?
In 2014, I began taking it more seriously and experimenting more with the feelings of coming out of my body. Sometimes it would happen spontaneously where I'd be waking up and I would feel an electrical sensation come across my body. And I knew based on things I read that this was your astral body beginning to disconnect from your physical body. But I was too afraid of it, so I pushed it aside. In 2014, I actually met an out-of-body practitioner and now author, a guy named Kensho. That's not his real name. He's a Buddhist fundamentalist. But I met him here in Los Angeles, still a good friend of mine. He had some remarkable stories, I think much more remarkable than anything I could talk about. But I think talking to him and learning about his techniques helped initiate a curiosity that led me to going all the way with it. So as I said, in early 2014, I began having these experiences, which was kind of like when you do anything that's a bit exciting or dangerous. I mean, it's not really dangerous, but, you know, like rock climbing or parachuting, whatever. Like the first time it's scary. But then after that, you know, you're used to what happens, and so it's no longer something to be frightened of. So,
could I ask you a question? Because people are wondering about this. You said your astral body is getting ready to separate from your physical body, and most people don't know what we're talking about. So would you explain that, please?
Well, that's what the afterlife is. When you read about like near-death experiences, what happens, they go up out of their bodies in the hospital room, and then they watch things, and then, you know, a portal opens up, or, you know, deceased loved ones appear and they have a meeting, or they meet with their higher self, and they get, you know, they decide to go back. Well, I mean, that's the same thing. It's just that we have the ability to go outside of our bodies anyway. You don't have to necessarily be near death to do it. And everybody has that ability built in.
In fact, we do it every night for most of us, once when our physical bodies sleep. But how do you view an astral body? Can you describe to people what their astral body is?
The astral body is your existence on a higher density dimension. So that's what the afterlife is. So basically, I mean, life's a big radio station, so we're tuned to one station. And then if you turn the knob, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, reality has completely shifted. It just means that we've changed frequencies one notch over. And so it has the interesting effect of having multiple versions of what our physical reality is, right? So it's a separate version of the body we're in right now, tuned to a higher frequency. So it's kind of like, I use different analogies. It's like on Photoshop, it's like using layers. If anybody here is into graphic design, you know, you have different layers of the same thing that you can move around. But there's also some more mechanical elements. Like we have the silver cord. We have an energetic filament that keeps the astral body and the physical body tied together.
Right.
So that we can maintain a life here, you know, with all the physical rules that we have. And then when the time is right, that can disconnect, and then we can go on to a higher density dimension that we call the afterlife.
What I tell people is it's like nested Russian dolls, Matryoshka dolls. There is this body that's sort of coterminous with probably interior to your physical body, and it travels widely often when we're asleep. It can go to the end of the universe even, and that silver cord will stretch and stretch. But what you're doing is talking about going out of body when you're not having a near-death experience and you're not dying. Instead, you're just going to go, and you're not also doing it as a normal part of sleep, but you're awake, right? And
yeah.
You're just taking a trip. So how do you initiate that?
Well, it's kind of married to dream states still, and it's also you can do it organically. So there's a difference, and I'll explain. And in my opinion, there's two types of out-of-body experiences you can have. The first is having it done organically or from the beginning, I like to say. So you feel yourself disconnecting from your body, and then you push yourself up out of your body, and now you're in your bedroom, and you may see your other body lying on the ground or the ground of bed, or you may not see your body there because you've already switched into a different dimension. So that's one way, and this happens really, like in my opinion, learn how to keep yourself conscious while you're falling asleep, because what happens is that the physical body, you know, shuts down, goes to sleep, but the astral body is, you know, it doesn't shut down. So if you can find like that little in-between point, then you'll hit just the right spot where you'll find that you have astral consciousness. The thing is, when you're in astral consciousness, it's not any different than how you normally are, so you may not even realize it. I knew I was going out of my body when I found myself waking up and looking around the room, but I could hear myself snoring. And then the realization came that, you know, my eyes were closed. So how come my eyes are open? Because how come I'm looking around the room? That's because I switched to my astral.
Wow.
So that's sorry?
This seems unusual to me. So do you think you have unusual gifts in doing this? Because people are listening and going, what?
Well, my gift, I think, is my minor background in journalism. My thing is I want to report accurately and report details. I know so many people who have way more fantastic out-of-body experiences than I do. All I'm able to do is I'm basically clever is what I am. I can write down these experiences and I can gather all the details, and I can use deductive reasoning to come to conclusions that maybe other people don't. But I will say, you know, I mentioned that one type, but there's a second type, and this has to do with how out-of-body experiences are married in a sense to our dream states. So you can think of a layer. So on one layer, we have our consciousness here, but in between that and a vibrant, happy life in a higher density dimension, we have this thing called the dreamscape. We have our subconsciousness, a kind of, I want to say, a non-consensus reality that exists inside of our own minds. And these are dreams, and it's a low state of consciousness. And really, it's a huge hassle, because what happens is that you have to get past that whole dream fog to figure out what's happening beyond it, which is oftentimes a parallel astral existence that we have that we can't access. And
we have to
learn how to get past the dream state, get past the lucid dream state, and find what's really happening in our so-called dreams when we're having real experiences.
Wow. So you're trying to make sense of this, research it using yourself as your investigative tool, and figure out what's really going on. It sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I would say so.
Wow, this is great. Okay, so you're doing that and you're having these experiences. And one of the things Wendy Zammit said, you've got to talk to him, because he and Suzanne did some research together and it was amazing. So what did you and Suzanne Wilson do?
Well, it's a long story. We have to start from the beginning, which was last summer. As you know, my mom passed away.
Uh-huh.
And of course, this was a big traumatic thing that happened. But it was also, you know, it led to some great opportunities, because I've been in touch with my mom since she passed, and I've been able to. My mom's very talented at reaching past the dimensions. So at least between me and my father, she's able to, you know, come to us, appear in like the kind of astral sleep state and almost materialize physically. Like I felt her lying next to me. We've had many conversations.
Wow. And, isn't this so wonderful? That's wonderful.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, she's still around. I mean, it's not even, you know, it's not even an issue. I mean, like I talked to her about a month ago. I mean, that's
yeah,
kind of how it is. And
that's great.
The thing is that, you know, when you gain these abilities to become conscious of yourself astrally, and it's very easy for so-called spirits or the higher density humans to make contact with you, because it's like an open door. So it means you don't have to go through a medium, you don't have to use a Ouija board, you don't have to do some kind of channeling. You can verbally talk like you and I are talking now. And now the thing is that it's a bit more telepathic, because you find, you know, you're connecting based on thoughts. But the thing
yes.
is, it sounds just as loud and crisp as we're talking. Only when you take a moment and realize, hey, my lips aren't moving,
yes.
you realize that it's telepathic communication.
Yes.
But again, though, but it's a verbal one-on-one. So I've now done this with a few people. I've done this, you know, with my mom. I've done this with a couple of kind of, I want to call them guides, but curious astral residents who have wanted to speak to me. Who have, you know, come to me that I've, you know, had conversations with, and I've done this during astral experiences and various types of realms and settings where I've been able to travel to and interview the people on that side, literally grab them, be like, hey, I'm projecting right now. Tell me, you know, nutshell, what's your name? Where are you from? Did you come here? Did you pass away on Earth? Is that how you came here? Tell me, you know, your background. So I do that a lot. If I find myself in an astral state, like, that's my first priority, is to interrogate people.
It's like a whole new, not just world, but universe that you're exploring, which is very exciting. Now, so where does Suzanne come in?
Okay, sorry. So, yeah,
that's
so
okay.
To go back to when my mom passed away, so you know, I began having these experiences where I was meeting her astrally. So I would enter an astral state, and oftentimes I'd be back at the old family ranch. Now, the family ranch house has long been bulldozed, but like a replica of it exists on the parallel astral side. And so I used to go there anyway when I would astral travel. Like, I would literally wake up in there and like look around and find myself, you know, in my old bedroom. So that's a bit of a jarring experience when that happens.
Yes.
But regardless, when my mom passed away, that's where she went. And I just like a couple of, maybe like a week after she passed, I met up with her there, and you know, she wasn't aware yet that she had passed away. And I began talking to her, and she thought, you know, she didn't know what happened. She thought that maybe she had some kind of amnesia. She's like, well, one minute I'm in the hospital, and now I'm back at the old family ranch house. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, wow.
And I tried to talk to her about this, but I noticed that anytime I wanted to breach the subject and explain that she had died, like, I think some kind of higher force came in and intervened, because it knew that she was in a psychologically fragile state. And
yes.
like she had to be caressed into the reality of what happened. I think in life she was very conflicted about what happens when we die, and I think she had a lot of preconceived ideas about like heaven or hell, and it wasn't adding up to her. And I think she would have had like a mental crisis if somebody just told her immediately, like, "Hey, you died." So, and I'm getting to the Suzanne Wilson part. Don't worry, but it's a long story. Okay, so
let's do this. We're about to take a break, and I'd just like to sum up a couple of things. One thing that we know is that sometimes, often, people don't know that they have died, and they have to be helped to understand it just as gently as they were getting you to help your mom. So, this all rings so true to me, and I think it's exciting. This is a story I've not heard before. So here you are, frolicking around, and now you're with your mother trying to help her understand that she's just gone to the next stage. And now you're going to tell us the Suzanne story. Suzanne Wilson is the greatest living medium as far as I'm concerned, and I know she has worked with Cyrus. And let's hear the story.
Okay, so long story short, kind of to condense some things, like, my mom was there, and then she was eventually transferred to a quote halls of healing, which really was a hospital. And
uh-huh.
she was taken care of by kind of these nurses. They look kind of like they're in the 1950s style outfits. And I would go there as well and check on her. My mom, I'm sorry to say, she wasn't in perfect mental health, because when she passed away, she wasn't at all. And the whole point was to heal her back up to her full self. But it was a process. And I think, you know, there's many things I've learned in this whole adventure. And one of them is that, you know, we don't automatically become perfect and healed of certain psychological problems or mental issues. Some of those things carry on and require the help of other people on that side to help us get better. Now, so all that was happening, I was having those experiences. Now, some months before my mom passed away, there was a mysterious benefactor named Roberta Grimes who patched me through with Suzanne Wilson.
I remembered that. Okay.
But Suzanne Wilson is, you know, she's the most booked person I've ever experienced. It took like 9 months to finally, you know, have my session with her. And so this was after my mom passed, after all this happened. It was now that November. So she finally, you know, I was visiting in Arizona back in Tucson, where my family is, and I got the call from Suzanne. So basically, with Suzanne Wilson, she was able to verify all my astral experiences and the people I was meeting on that side, even before I had told anybody. And she was able to verify experiences that my father was having. And I definitely, you know, not a soul knew about that. And then she was able to bring through, of course, lots of family from where you are, from Texas. And she was able to patch me through to some guides who I had been aware of previously. Actually, they're of an Egyptian nature, because apparently I had a past life as an Egyptian priest or something. Who would guess? But
that's not surprising.
But right. So I guess the thing about the Suzanne Wilson experience is that, well, I already knew everything that was happening was real, but it added a whole higher flavor on top of it. Because to give you an example, I was visiting my mom, and she was in this hospital. She was in this kind of halls of healing place where she was, you know, where her soul was being healed. And, you know, it was kind of like, I mean, it kind of looked like a hospital, but a little bit more old-fashioned, a little bit nicer looking. And there was this really big white rooms, and, you know, the patients were kind of sectioned off, because what happens on that side, you see, the astral side, it's very physical. It's like our world. And this is also something that people don't like to believe, or they have a tough time comprehending, but it's true. It's a physical, solid place like our world, but there's some rules which are different. One of those rules is that your thoughts, if they're strong enough, may sometimes manifest physically. So if you really, really, really concentrate on like making a apple appear, you may very well make an apple appear. And it's kind of a skill set. Like, people learn to do this. It's a bit like we see in pop culture, like sorcerers and wizards who can conjure things, right? So it's, in my opinion, it's a little bit like that. So the thing is that if somebody isn't in a perfect mental state, they may be creating things around them which are not that pleasant. And so this was happening with my mom. She passed away, and I think she had a lot of anger and a lot of problems and kind of what we might call like a dark state of mind, like a negative vibration. And so she was manifesting some of these things around her. And without even going into details, it wasn't that pretty. And this is why she had to have a team of professionals helping her. Among these professionals was a nurse. I believe her name was Miss Connor. So she looked like a 1950s style nurse, and maybe middle-aged. And she was the one whom I would speak to when I was astrally traveling to this location. And then she'd take me in to see my mom. So I don't really think I shared this. I may have shared some bits of info to my group Afterlife Topics, but I don't remember. So I don't think it was possible to have like a hot reading. I know Suzanne Wilson is legit, and, you know, she had details no one else could have imagined. Basically, she said, like, look, I see your mom, and there's a nurse helping her. The nurse, her name was Miss Connor. I didn't know this at the time, but this is what Suzanne told me. And she described the nurse. So she described the person whom I had been visiting with in the astral environments. And so basically she said that, you know, the nurse is here. She has your mom there also. And it became kind of like, a conference call, basically. So it was like me, Suzanne, the nurse, and it was my mom. And so at one point, me and Suzanne and the nurse, we were all like lecturing my mom, because my mom was saying things about how she's heavily attached to my father. And I'm sorry to say, but my father was rather abusive. I mean, he was devastated when my mom passed away, and he doesn't have full cognition that he has abusive elements of his personality. But my mom's life was very sheltered, very sequestered, and in a sense, a lot of her issues stemmed from this codependent relationship that she had with my father. So my mom was still like harping about my father, and I remember like me and Suzanne and this nurse, we were kind of telling her like, hey, you know, it's kind of a cop-out. Like, you have to go and you have to lead your own life now. It's time to not worry so much about him. I mean, he didn't look out for your best interests when you were here, and now it's time that you can lead your own life. We were afraid that my mom is going to just hang around my father like until my father passes and not go off and have her own life. So it really was a bit like a conference call, and we were trying to get through to my mom and explain to her that she needs to live her own life again. And yes. So this was, of course, a big deal to me, because I mean, yes, with the astral experiences, I'd already spoken to my mom, but like this was even better, because I was talking to her with these professionals, and I had this direct line of communication. So
like to point out how extraordinary this is. Of so many things we're learning from this. One thing is, people don't become emotionally healthy just because they've graduated. And in fact, what you're doing is helping your mother to heal. And there's a tremendous amount of availability of people to help people to heal emotionally. But this is extraordinary. I've never heard this story before, and it's wonderful. One of the questions I think people would like to have to ask of you is, so how useful is this astral travel stuff? And you've just given us a wonderful example of how useful it can be. You're helping your mother to heal. And you can go visit her in an astral, you know, home or hospital where she's being helped to get better. That's an amazing story, Cyrus.
Yeah. So the question is, how useful is it? Well, I think that it's probably the most useful when it comes to being a method of spirit communication that people don't always use, because we always think about mediums, and of course, you know, we have the physical mediumship, which is awesome when somebody from that side uses a medium's body to materialize into the room, you know, people like David
yes,
Thompson.
Of course.
And then, of course, we have like the cell phone stuff that you guys are talking about, you, Craig Hogan,
yes.
Like Schwartz, and you know, so we
yes.
have some advancements, but I think we can't neglect being able to go there ourselves, because I think, you know, when they come to visit us, for them, it's kind of like they're astral projecting, because they're projecting their consciousness outside of where they are to come down to this dimension, right?
Uh-huh,
but
yes.
The thing is that, you know, we have the same, so when we astral project, what we're doing is we're doing this the opposite, like we're projecting ourselves to them. And of course, it's easier, because in this case, we appear there fully, and, you know, like we are a duplicate of our bodies here. So it's much more engaging for us to go there, because we can, you know, physically be there, whereas they require like mediums, and sometimes all they can do is like move a book off a shelf or something.
Right. They do parlor tricks is about all they can do.
Yeah.
So if you were going to teach someone how to do this, someone is listening, is that they really want to try. Obviously, it takes some effort to learn, but what would be the first steps they would take?
Well, you need to get better at lucid dreaming, because lucid dreaming is not astral projection, because like I like this analogy. I mean, if you're astral projecting, then you shouldn't be seeing Daffy Duck running around. I mean, you can tell when there are elements of your imagination or your subconscious dreamscape, your dream field.
Cyrus, tell people what lucid dreaming is.
Well, lucid dreaming is when you're in a dream and then you take full conscious awareness of it. So oftentimes people use that to have fun so they can create whatever they want.
Of course.
It's a non-consensus subjective reality. And there's that's a whole subject we can go into.
Right.
And that exists on the other side as well. In fact, on the other side, I think some people get a little bit lost in those. Like people may withdraw into their non-consensus realities because it's something that they can, you know, it's almost like addicting. I mean, it's like a video game. You go in there, you want to create a F-16 fighter, or you want to create this celebrity you had a crush on. You can create all these things, but it's all attached to your mind. So if if you're talking to somebody in a lucid dream, I mean, it may seem convincing until you probe a little bit deeper and you come to find that you're talking to yourself. And you come to find that, you know, whatever they say, whatever they say is kind of like it's already in your own head, and if you can become aware of that. So that's lucid dreaming. Astral projection is when you're on a higher density that's shared by other inhabitants, which is also what this world is as well. So, so in a astral environment, suddenly you're around real people, and if you do begin having like dream hallucinations, it's kind of like, let's say we're in this world and we take some DMT or acid, you know, like to us we're going to start seeing hallucinations and like Bugs Bunny running around, or you know, who knows what. But to other people, it'll just look like we're spaced out or we're talking to ourselves. And that's something you may encounter in these astral worlds as well, is you may encounter people who are from this side dreaming, because it's kind of like they're sleepwalking, or they're talking to themselves, or they're spaced out. And so I think that's something that people on the other side often recognize. It's like, oh, that guy's dreaming. Look, he's talking to himself and he's walking around and he's in his own little world. So as we can see, when you're asleep, you may be partially in the astral dimension, you may be partially in your own subjective reality. So if you're astral projecting, what's happening is you're snapping out of that dreamscape, and you're becoming lucidly aware of the real place that you may also be inhabiting.
It seems like you never actually sleep. You're busy all the time. When your body's sleeping, you're off doing other stuff.
Yeah, it's like that for a lot of us. And, you know, the thing is that astral projection is a bit misunderstood, even by some of the greats. Like, I don't mean to sound snobby, but I think, you know, of course, the greats like Munro and Bulman and these guys. But I think that there's a misunderstanding, because, you see, we already have, many of us have parallel lives on that side, and it may be happening right now. So, like, I may literally be like hanging out somewhere on the astral side simultaneously to being here talking to you. We in the afterlife field, we hear all types of reports, and sometimes it causes a bit of arguing, because people say, well, no, the afterlife is like this, and other people say, no, it's like that.
But, right.
You know, in reality, it's all of the above is correct. So if you ever want to sniff out somebody who's giving you bad info, it's going to be anybody who says XYZ is not possible, because that's almost always going to be BS. Really, the way it works is that there's a very physical dimension that a lot of us go to, a lot of us want to go to. It's similar in surprising ways to this world. I call it like the second Earth, because it's a mirror image of our planet. So there's an astral version of Los Angeles, an astral version of India, an astral version of Tokyo. And it's where all human civilization migrates to after we pass on. And then, of course, there are higher like spheres depending on your level of consciousness. So there are, in fact, you know, these celestial, non-physical kinds of places that we may hear about in NDEs. So one place is not better than the other place. You see, you know, we all desire different challenges as souls. And so the place that's very close to the Earth plane also requires physical bodies to be able to operate, kind of like, you know, we have now, except it's 1 degree higher, 1 degree less physical. You don't have to breathe, you know, your bodily functions are a bit different. I don't think you have like a respiratory system, but you have other functional abilities. But it's very similar to where, like, if you appeared there, you may not even realize it. Like, my mom didn't realize that she had passed on. It's, you know, it's just like our world. But then there's levels above that if one chooses to, you know, go up or go back down. But it doesn't mean that a higher level is better. It just means that, you know, we have experiences we want to do there. And then we may, from that point, decide to come back down to a astral place or an Earth place where it's physical again. So that's in a nutshell, a very complex topic. I don't know, we only have a few minutes left, so let me just quickly talk about some of the places I've been to. Lately, when I project, I found myself in a lot of hotels. And the way I can figure it is that right now I'm doing a lot of travel on the astral side like I do on this side. And I think the last cool experience I had like a few weeks ago, I woke up to this beautiful Japanese-style hotel. So it's kind of like a ryokan, like one of those Japanese traditional hotels, but it was much more lavish. And I was in the desert, and the desert was phenomenal. And you know, when I'm there, I get hit by some of the memories of my life on the astral side. And so I recognize that I was in Utah. So I wasn't in this Utah, I was in the astral side of Utah.
Wow.
And I became conscious, and I went downstairs, and I went into there was like a lake surrounding the hotel, and there were people bathing. And so I went into this kind of pond, and you know, again, very, very lavish. And there were these guys in the pond, so I wanted to talk to them. And there was actually some people, they were on a business retreat for their company, and they were French. And so they were like French, like software engineers. And it always catches me off guard when I find things that are so similar to this world.
So are you saying these are dead people who were software engineers, and they were taking a dead sabbatical to this other place?
Sure. But of course, to them, you know, they're not dead. They just, you know, they probably have, you know, like this guy I was talking to, we ended up having a conversation, and he was talking about some kind of crazy stuff that caught me off guard, because I asked him how he arrived at the hotel, and he says he took an airplane. And I told him, well, look, I'm projecting from Earth right now, so I know you should be able to just teleport any place you want to go to. So why would you take an airplane? And so he said, I have an answer. And so he picked up his cell phone, and he looked at something up, like it was on the web, and he said, well, you know, the thing is that in the old days, we were able to just do that, but because of the population of the Earth increasing, it has a direct effect on how the rules and physics on this plane operate. And right now, we're not able to teleport at will like we used to do in the past. And I was kind of speechless. Maybe he was pranking me. I have no idea. But that's just don't take it to heart. It may be completely off base. I have no idea, but that's just what he told me. It's like, these are the types of experiences I have. And so that was one of them. And, you know, I've had many others.
Great.
That's
oh,
one example.
My. Wow. Well, actually, what we're finding is things do develop there in some ways that mimic Earth and in some ways that are different. I've talked about that. I'm going to soon do another program just about what it's like to die. And I've got some new things to tell people during that time that I've just learned. This is exciting because everything is alive. Everything is moving. Everything is changing. So, Cyrus, what's next for you? Are you going to write another book?
Couple things real quick. So right now I'm working with a lovely author in Australia named Karen Swain. We're working on a book called The Awakened Soul Series. It's a book, which is the first book is about death. And so that'll be coming out later this year. And it's a compilation of like NDEs and death experiences, as well as my own chapter in the book. I have another book I'm working on slowly called Understanding Spirit Communication. So please, you know, follow me like on my Facebook group, Afterlife Topics, or go to afterlifetopics.com to reach me or find my first book. And in time, the next book will come out. And of course, this September, I will be doing a presentation at the Afterlife Symposium along with yourself and, you know, many other people. So if you happen to be going there, you'll be able to catch up with me there as well.
That's one of the beauties of this symposium, because all the presenters are really part of the whole group of people there. So we get to do a lot of sitting around and talking with people like Cyrus that you never could do anywhere else. That's September 15 to 17, 2017 in Scottsdale. And if you're interested, just go to afterlifestudies.org and learn more. And Cyrus, I have to talk to you again soon, because you know so much, and you keep doing things because you're so adventurous. That's one of the beauties of being young, I think. You'll do these things just quickly. Do you think there's danger in doing this kind of astral projection? Do you feel ever unsafe?
Thing is, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything, and I will say straight up, if you're not in a positive state of mind, the afterlife, the astral world, it's not entirely daisies and flowers and sunshine. There's darker realms, and the vibratory principles are that we attract what the energy we put out. That includes where we appear during astral states, which particular realm. And so people have had negative experiences if they're in a bad state of mind, or if they have some internal emotions or that they haven't worked out. So I would say don't do it until you've figured out all your little problems. Only if it's something's big. If you have like a big issue or like anger, you're in a state of grief or unhappiness, don't do it. But as soon as you just feel okay, you feel comfortable, then it's perfectly safe. And if you ever do find yourself in a negative situation, know that you have full control. And the only thing a boogeyman can do is make you think that they have control. But once you realize that the control is really in your hands, then they can't do anything.
Perfect. That's a perfect summary. Thank you so much for saying that, Cyrus.
Sure.
And thank you for being with us today. As I say, we're going to have to do this again, and I look forward so much to seeing you at the symposium.
Yep.
So please consider yourself hugged, and have a lovely evening.
Thank you, Roberta. I'm so happy. And yes, I will also be seeing you at the symposium.
Everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, as you know, and I just have a few words to say in summing up. The first thing I want you to know is there is a good series that you might, if you're interested in the whole notion of what we talked about with Cyrus, do read Robert Munro's trilogy, Journeys Out of the Body, Far Journeys, and Ultimate Journey. It is just beautiful. What this man was able to do. And he, like Cyrus, is just a ruthlessly honest and fearless explorer. So if this is something that piques your attention, do that. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you fully grasp the implications of that, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Our guest next week will be Suzanne Giesman. She's one of America's foremost mental mediums, and she's been working of late with my favorite medium, Suzanne Wilson. Suzanne spelled her name with an S. The other Suzanne Giesman, spells her name with a Z, and together they make a dynamite duo. She's been certified to be accurate by people like Dr. Gary Schwartz and Dr. Wayne Dyer, and she is a beautiful human being, genuinely gifted and genuinely kind. You're going to enjoy her. Please join us next week. Today we've been talking with Cyrus Kirkpatrick, who, I'm perfectly frank, fascinates me. He's so young and he's so brilliant. If you're interested and you're young, please reach out to me, reach out to other people in this field, because this is going to be a burgeoning field when you are in at the prime of your life, and it would be wonderful for you if you were part of this glorious, glorious thing. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and you can find them anywhere. You can find them also as audiobooks, and there's an app for Seek Reality. So you can find that as well, and find us on a number of radio stations. We keep adding more, which is kind of fun for me. I'm very grateful that you listen every week. I'm happy to hear from you at robertagrimes.com. If you have any questions, I'm answering questions every day, and it's the best part of my day. So please do reach out if you'd like to. And as always, I want you to know that you are an eternal being. You never began, you never will end, and you are infinitely loved.